Member for Blair has the call. The member for Blair has the call.
Right.
The member for Blair has the call.
I can't even swear.
The member for Blair has the call. The member for Blair has the call.
My question is to the Minister.
Member for Blair, resume his seat. No, well, come on. I mean, we're not running a sideshow.
We really, really talk politics here on Blueprint for Living. Unless, of course, you detect some sort of a Marxist subtext every time that anyone mentions repotting grevilleas. It's not our bag. But our parliament is something which is top of mind at the moment. It's an election year. The monkey house will be full again as they go about the nation's business. It is something of a paradox in our age of increasing connection that somehow our politicians, their business, we seem increasingly disconnected from it. Now, there are reasons for that, many of them. What if one of them was the nature of the Parliament House itself, the building, the design of that place? What if it was designed to isolate? If it was built to put the practitioners of politics at a remove from the people they serve and maybe even each other? Now, Winston Churchill nailed it, as was his wont. We shape our buildings and thereafter they shape us, he said. What did we shape? High on the hill in Canberra's Parliament House. How has that building shaped our politics? Kim Dovey has given considerable thought to this. He's Professor of Architecture and Urban Design at the University of Melbourne. And Lenore Taylor joins us too. A worker in that building, editor of Guardian Australia. Kim, let's take this back a bit to begin. Talk to me a little about the relationship between architecture and power.
Well, this is a complex but mysterious relationship, but I think I would simplify it by saying that it's that architecture has power in large part by not being noticed, by, in a sense, being relegated to the taken for granted. We think of power as something that's practiced sort of, you know, in space, but we don't look at the way in which architecture frames that space, and it does it really in two ways. One is through walls and spaces, the way they're segmented, the way they enable us to come together and the way they separate us. And the other one is that it sort of tells stories, that spaces are symbolic, architecture is symbolic. It constructs identities and narratives.
And it may do these things quietly, but it does these things with intent.
Yeah, but it's always very hard to identify the intent. I don't actually think there's a smoke-filled room where someone's saying that
evil plotting architects.
Here's how I want power to be practiced in this space, and I'm going to design it this way in order to make that happen. I think architecture, it doesn't determine that anything happens in it. It enables things to happen, and it constrains other things. It's more effective at stopping things from happening than making them happen. But it enables people to connect with other people, and it often stops them from connecting.
All right, that's a nice broad context. Let's take it to the specific in this Parliament House. And a big part of that was forming these facsimiles of the British Parliament within this new Australian building. This is sort of the foundation space in that Parliament House, is the houses themselves.
Well, the British House of Commons was, of course, based on a chapel from the Palace at Westminster. And it was quite a small chapel where the rows of choir boys were lined up on the walls facing each other and, of course, singing in unison. But that transformed
Those
into
happy
Parliament.
Days of God.
Yeah, that transformed into Parliament as a very kind of divisive spatial arrangement where they were ultimately separated at sword fighting, what was called sword fighting distance, where you could sort of see the whites of the eyes of the opponent but not actually cross that space very easily.
So this is the first instance in which the construction of those spaces creates a certain kind of behaviour. We create this adversarial pit within our parliament.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. A lot of people think that kind of cut and thrust of debate is really what parliament's all about. There's others who think that it's decidedly sexist because you really have, you know, a lot of sort of grown men really at each other's throats in a way that they're not. They step out of that house and they're often friends.
Happy families.
Yeah.
Lenore, you've reported in both of our federal parliament houses, and the common element to both of those has been that sort of fundamental construction of the House of Representatives and the Senate. But it's the broader building of the Parliament that has changed significantly between the old and the new Parliament House. What's the most distinct characteristic in which that has changed?
Well, the new Parliament House is obviously considerably larger and often, I think, gets criticised for things that are really more attributable to societal and other technological changes that have happened between the old and the new Parliament House. I mean, I worked in the old Parliament House as a cadet on the Canberra Times, so only for a couple of months, but we had five people in an office that had three desks. Mm. The cramped nature of that building was really quite extraordinary. So, you know, you can look back at it with rose-coloured glasses, but actually, you know, modern OH&S standards would say they really did need a bunch more space.
And yet, and I too worked for about 6 months as a cadet for the Canberra Times in the old Parliament House. And yes, those rooms were appalling, but outside of those rooms, in the corridors of that building, there was a lot of people and a lot of accidental meetings with those people. There was nowhere really to hide in that building.
Well, that's absolutely true, but I guess we need to think about why that was. I mean, because so many other things have happened since then or changed since then other than the design of the Parliament House itself. I mean, there was at that time no mobile phones and no internet. So you had to walk to the boxes to get a press release and you had to walk down to see a press secretary to get information. We had one deadline a day, so you had lots more time to wander around. Parliamentary hours, sitting hours were much later, so people hung around in the building much longer. Paul Keating changed that and the House rose, or the Parliament rose much earlier. It was much sort of more family-friendly, reasonable hours. There was, I think, it's safe to say now there are quite different norms about acceptable drinking of alcohol at work than then. There's really different security arrangements, in part for good reason. There was no social media then, which is probably just as well given some of the things that used to happen in the non-members bar. So I think in attributing some of those changes to the architecture, we have to also think about the contribution of all those other things that have changed, which I think are really much more responsible for the different interpersonal relationships in the new Parliament House than the architecture itself.
And yet, Kim, you write in your writings on this subject, which have, you know, been considerable, a quote that old building, the old Parliament House, quote, did not work for politicians. Can you explain what you mean by that and how that has been addressed in the new Parliament House?
Well, it didn't work for the politicians in the sense and under the conditions, and often they were ministers, where they wanted to control the encounter with the press. And so that there were various kind of protocols emerged in that old house, which, of course, it was dysfunctional in a whole lot of ways, but there were sort of doorstop interview protocols and so on. And in many ways, it didn't work because it didn't really protect the politicians from the journalists, and they're much better protected in the new Parliament House.
I would say that means it worked really well. I mean, in the old Parliament House, you could wander around the ministerial wing, and because the ministerial offices were so crowded, a lot of the people waiting to see ministers or their advisers were sitting on sofas in the corridor. So you could, A, figure out what the minister was getting briefed on, and B, talk to those people and, you know, almost always get a story. At the Canberra Times office, you would remember, Jonathan, was sort of directly above the cabinet room. So you could hear when cabinet was breaking and beat all straight down the steps.
Ear to the floor.
Well, just go straight down and talk to them, like follow them, the ministers down the corridors. Like you could, it was easier to get information. I guess the counter argument is that getting information via WhatsApp is probably less likely your source to be revealed than, you know, if you were seen kind of chatting to someone in a corridor or disappearing into someone's office.
Swings and roundabouts and that, I guess. I mean, Kim, that intimacy, that sort of corridor accidental encounter was almost precisely what the design of the new building sought to remove.
Yeah. I mean, lobbyists, they're named after the space where they operate. you know, so lobbies or corridors, you know, sort of under sort of modernist ideology and architecture, they're really kind of spaces for getting from A to B. But actually, in terms of the practices of power, they're in many ways the most important spaces, because the accidental encounters can happen there, and they're a little bit like the internal streets. So that the role that a street plays in urban life and the ways in which democracy is linked to the life of the street and the square and the plaza. You know, based originally in the Agora and so on, is that plays out in the interiors of buildings as well at a smaller scale. And that's what was going on here, and that's a part of what was being eradicated.
If we take it to the exterior, that sort of amplifies the effect of this building, that within Canberra, perched on that hill, surrounded by a sweep of grass and then by trees, by a ring road, almost like a moat, There are various layers of isolation of this democratic edifice.
Yeah. We built a Parliament House in the bush, as if we're a sort of a bush nation, that which is of course one of the idealised versions of Australia. But Australia is actually a very urbanised nation. We're one of the most urbanised on the planet, and I did float a little thought bubble about how we might urbanise that surrounding ring of Parliament House and, in a sense, change the context. There's not a lot you can change about the building, but you can change the context that it's in.
I don't think building, urbanising that strip of parkland would do much to allow very many people to sort of walk to Parliament, because of the low-density nature of all of Canberra. Mm. And I actually used to really like walking around it, and so did many politicians. They'd walk around it and obviously sort of consider things and think about things. I think it's one of the very many things about New Parliament House that I really like.
Going there as a place of work, though, Lenore, does it remove you from A, you know, the city that surrounds it, and then perhaps B, by extension, from the broader country? Is it a bit of a fortress, a remote outpost?
Well, no, not by virtue of its design. I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I think if you transposed all of those factors that I talked about before, the modern need for security, the, you know, modern forms of communication on the old Parliament House or on many other different types of buildings, you'd end up with a similar situation. I don't think it's the fault of the building. And I think the building's actually incredibly beautiful and conducive to work. There are beautiful courtyards through New Parliament House, one that fills with rhododendrons in the springtime, and people go and sit in it and eat their lunch and chat. There's beautiful art through it. There's beautiful aspects when you look out the windows, and because, you know, this sort of the lines of the cement in the sky. So it's true that people don't hang around and chat as much, but I don't think that's the fault of the building or the architecture. I don't think it's the fault of that particular part of Canberra. It might be partly because Canberra is so low density overall, you know, it's not sitting in the middle of a dense urban area, but the building itself, I think, gets a bad rap.
There's been a lot of leadership turmoil of late, much in recent years. Do you think, Lenore, that there's something about the nature of the space that encourages that sort of invisible scheming, that it lends itself to that kind of politicking?
I think you could put them in a tent and they'd scheme just the same.
I think you're probably right. Do you have a view on that, Kim?
Oh, I think that the new building just separates the politicians. It's huge. It's a very, very extravagant building. I think Lenore's been seduced by it a bit. It's very beautiful. It's a bit like a resort. I mean, why wouldn't
it's
you want to
like
spend a lot
resort,
of time
how?
There?
Resort? How? What's resort like about it? Because it has a gym. Most modern work, like many large modern workplaces, have a gym. People have offices sufficient for the staff that they have. I think people can romanticise the old building, but there was nothing particularly romantic about having five people in an office with three desks, or in other circumstances in that building, people working in actual former broom closets. I mean, I think the building has the space that it requires to do the work that's done in it, and the isolation you describe, which, you know, is real, isn't a circumstance of that, isn't caused by the architecture. It's caused by a whole lot of other things.
It is, Kim, a beautiful building.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that there's a dilemma. I've had conversations with people who want to move Parliament out of there to another location, start again, you know, let's do it right the next time and then turn this into a museum or something. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that in a sense we're stuck with it, that we can urbanise it. We can urbanise the interior a bit more too. We can provide much better public access. I think this, you know, security fetish we've got is out of control. I really do. I think that the main hall, that the King's Hall and the old Parliament House, which is the one place that a lot of people talk about, you walk straight in the entrance, you're in King's Hall, the two chambers are on either side, and you're mixing with politicians, as we do every day in the street. I mean, when these people walk out into the city, they're not, you know, protected by all of these gates and guards. I can't see why many parts of the interior of Parliament House can't be places where the public wanders all the way through to the central so-called members' hall, where members are never, because they've got no reason to be there, and the public aren't there either. So that that citizens are reduced to tourists in this building, to kind of standing on the balcony and looking at this empty so-called members' hall at the heart of our nation.
What do you make of that, Lenore?
Well, having worked in the building for a long time until a couple of years ago, and having listened to some of the security briefings and watched what happened in other parliament houses around the world, like, for instance, in Canada, I think we need to take security quite seriously. I think people, you know, citizens should be able to come into parliament, watch parliament, you know, walk around the building, and they do. I think the centre of the building is a problem in that tourists can come, or citizens can come into the second floor, but that bottom floor where the members' hall is directly in line of sight of that. So, you know, ideally it would be great to have that designed in a way that people did hang around there, but that does create security issues. But, you know, by and large, I don't think we can ignore security warnings. I think what happens around the world tells us that that would be highly foolish. I think some of the security stuff lately has gone a bit overboard, but, you know, by and large, I don't think we can ignore those things.
I guess the combined effect, Kim, is that thing of which you speak, that it's the separating of we, the observers, from the parliamentarians, the participants, and keeping a space between us.
Yeah, look, I think there's a case for some of that. The Commons Chamber itself, or the lower house, and the Senate, they have observation chambers where people are supposed to look but not
look but not touch.
Yeah, but even the chambers themselves are sort of designed at about twice the size they probably should be, in part to, I think, to sort of temper that intensity of debate. There's a case some people have for being a little bit overcrowded, that there's some good effects that come from that kind of intensity of encounter. It's like a crowded street, that sure, you can get to a point where you say, you know, this is just, you know, it's gone too far. But there's a point at which that crowding, that intensity, is what society and cities are all about. That's what you want.
Kim, thank you so much. Kim Dovey is Professor of Architecture and Urban Design at the Uni of Melbourne. Lenore Taylor was with us as well. She's editor of Guardian Australia. Who better to involve in this conversation of how Parliament might work for the benefit of politicians and the people who elect them than a politician? Anthony Albanese joins us. He's the Federal Member for Graindler and the Shadow Member for Infrastructure, Transport, Cities and Regional Development and Tourism. So, Anthony, you began your career in the old building, I'm guessing.
I did. I was a researcher for Tom Uren, who was a mentor of mine and a father figure in the old Parliament House, and it was when he was a minister. So I, a bit like Lenore's story about sharing desks, I shared a chair and a desk with another ministerial advisor, and one of us had to be in the library or just walking around or somewhere else at any particular time. But you did get a very different dynamic. We were in a corridor with Paul Keating, the treasurer, just down the end of the corridor. Kim Beazley is the defence minister. And so you ran into them. You ran into them in the men's room, amongst other places. So the dynamic was very different to the new Parliament House, and certainly the culture was different. People drank probably too much in the non-members bar, and everyone had to keep quiet at a particular time when Mungo McCallum would ring in his radio report from the Parliament House cafeteria phone at the end of the day, every day at about 5:30. But people would hang around and you'd be on a very casual basis mixing with people from all sides of politics as well as the media.
But there's a tremendous, I think this is the thing, out of that sort of chaos of humanity, there's sort of a levelling in that everybody has a right to conversation, everybody can bump into anybody else, that, you know, which sort of democratises the space a bit.
I think that's true, but it, of course, wasn't a particularly comfortable place to work when Tom Uren stepped down from the ministry after the 1987 election. Mm. I could hand him things at his desk without moving my chair. We were very close physically, and that had a dynamic. It wasn't a particularly good place to think and work and to get any space, and it was massively overcrowded. But I think that does stand in stark contrast to the dynamic that is happening in the new Parliament House.
Well, yeah, let's shift up. Capitol Hill a tad to the new house, where space is not an issue, where it's almost an overreaction to that sort of compressed atmosphere of the old house.
Well, I think it is a magnificent building, and it's certainly a very good place to work in terms of you do have space, the courtyards are beautiful, there's great artwork, it's a terrific building. But the downside of that is that I think for many members of Parliament, particularly those who aren't senior and attending a lot of meetings around the building, I've seen over a period of time many colleagues be pretty isolated, be sitting in their offices with their staff member watching one of the programs, Sky or ABC News, and I think that can have a real impact. Many people do feel quite lonely and isolated in the building, particularly those who aren't as busy as some of us.
So that's the social effect. I'm wondering, though, as well, as an MP, if you're spending much of your life in a room with your staff and Peter Credlin on the TV, what does that do then as well to your sense of the world?
Well, it's my view that part of the dynamic that happened with the Peter Dutton challenge to Malcolm Turnbull is that that was produced by a group of people, largely in the right wing of the Liberal Party, who in Canberra were sitting there watching Sky News and getting their information from just that, only talking to colleagues who agree with that perspective, and that had they gone back to their electorate at the end of that sitting week rather than stop Parliament sitting on the Thursday and then have the other ballot on the Friday, I think they would have got a very different message from Australians, who would have told them, regardless of their view about Labor, Liberal or Independent, that knocking off another elected Prime Minister wasn't a particularly palatable thing for them to do.
And yet knocking off Prime Ministers is almost, it's become habitual in that building.
we've spent some years
with that happening.
Indeed, and the architecture is part of that. The process began, of course, on the 23rd of June 2010. And you might recall Darryl Mellum, who was the Labor Party caucus chair, chastising the ABC as he left the building for the report that had been on either the news or the 7:30 report, the story was broken, that there was a challenge on, and just saying how absurd it was, because he certainly hadn't heard anything about it, nor had most people. But you had a very small group of people having meetings and deciding that this was a good idea. Just as in the Peter Dutton case, there was a small group of people deciding it would be a good idea. And the building, the architecture helps to facilitate that because people can disappear into offices, whereas in the old building, people would have been bumping into each other and just chatting in an unstructured way. Mm. In the new building, you have to make a conscious decision that I'm going to see Jonathan Green up in the ABC studios and ring them and find out that they're there, because if you've walked a kilometre to get there, on the off chance that you're sitting up there, then that's not a very wise thing to do.
The other part of it, I mean, the old Parliament House was, I guess, in terms of people's working circumstances in their offices, so congested and inhospitable, it pushed people into open areas.
That's right.
And there were places where people could congregate, which is also a thing which is lost in the new building.
Absolutely. And part of it is about technology, of course. In the old Parliament House, there weren't emails and there weren't mobile phones and people communicated much more face-to-face. And one of the things that I've found in politics, and I've said this to some of your journalist colleagues who from time to time will say to me, oh, well, I have from a source who tells me that this is happening. There are a lot of colleagues, I think, across the political spectrum who, when a journalist asks them a question, are incapable of saying, I don't know.
It's not actually allowed anymore.
It's not allowed. Everyone pretends they know more than they do. You know, people say things and that can create its own momentum when combined with the architecture of the building.
Do you think there's a sense amongst members, senators, staff, the political inhabitants of that building, that the building is affecting political culture? Have we been in it long enough now to have a sense on how that has changed people's behaviour?
Look, I think people will have different views about it. I mean, I love Parliament House as a building, and I think that it is a fantastic place to work. But it's hard for people to gather without it being pre-organised. And the fact that people in the new Parliament House have their own kitchens, the bathrooms are there, you could basically live there and come out at the end of the week. And perhaps some people that might explain some of the events of a few months ago.
I'm wondering what you make of Kim Dovey's idea that apart from the interior of the place, that its setting, its exterior, is something which could be changed to draw it more into the community. That notion of sort of urbanising the outside spaces around the Parliament House as well. How does that strike you?
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that, I've got to say. I think one of the tragedies that have occurred is that its openness in terms of all the kids rolling down the grass, the idea that people could walk over the elected representatives.
Appalling security implications for those kids rolling down the grass.
Absolutely. So some of that's been restricted by some of the security measures, but I think that the fact that you can walk around the gardens of Parliament House is very good. People will go out for a walk around the building. It's a decent circuit.
Still kept a bit from the people. It's got a bit of a moat.
That's true, but inevitably there would be a bit of a moat anyway in terms of some security concerns. But you know, it's there for all to see as well. I mean, that magnificent flagpole that you can see from just about all of Canberra, you can certainly see from all of the surrounds. I think it is a statement that it is on Capitol Hill there, and I think it's a fantastic building, and it should stand out from just another building.
Anthony Albanese, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
So there you go. Politics is the building to blame, Anthony Albanese. And you heard earlier from Kim Dovey and Lenore Taylor. This is Blueprint